Okay, we're starting here on the bottom of Pei Dalet Amud Bet, the two dots. Kuf up. I'm Rav Yehuda Marav. Lo huzaru kisheirot li'naseh lipsulim. This was quoted above in the discussion, which is that kohanot, a bat kohen, does not have any restriction against marrying someone who is otherwise pasula. In that the restriction against psulim only applies to kohanim, male kohanim, but to female kohanim, there's no restriction. She can marry a halal, she can marry as someone that would otherwise make her psula de kuna, she has no restriction against that. Lema misayle, let's say that our Mishnah support for that statement, because in our Mishnah it says, chalal shenasa ksheira, that a chalal married a ksheira. My love, kohenet, haru uyalo. What is the ksheira that we're speaking about here? It must be that he's talking about a kohenet. Umay ksheira, and what is the meaning of the word ksheira in the Mishnah? Ksheira le kuna. She is ksheira le kuna, meaning that she's someone who is otherwise a bad kohen. My says, lo, Israelit. It's not a kohenet, but rather it's an Israelit. It's a woman who's not a kohen. My ksheira. Then how do you define the word ksheira then? Obviously, ksheira lekal. She's someone who doesn't have any other psulim, is allowed to marry anyone. There is no restrictions against marrying her. Ihachi. Yesh lo ach kasher. In that case, where we said the chalal marries this ksheira, and then he has an ach kasher. He has a brother who is kasher, who's going to be the one in line for Yibum. So nami kasher the kal, you're going to say that ach kasher means that he's kasher the kal. Michlal dehu pasul the kal. The implications of that is the husband is pasul the kal, because if you're calling the brother an ach kasher, implying that whoever was the husband was not kasher the kal. But that's not the case. He was just a chlal. He wasn't someone who wasn't kasher the kal. Elav kohen. Must be that he's a kohen kasher the kohuna. He's a kohen. Madhu kohen he kohenet. If you're explaining the word kasher here to mean kohen, then ksheira is going to mean kohenet. Mar says midiria. Why do you have to confuse the two? Each one on its own merits. Ha kedi'ita, v'ha kedi'ita. The kohen, or the kasher, ach kasher, means a kohen. And therefore the implications by him being pasul means that he's pasul the kohuna, because he's a halal. The ksheira over here means ksheira, any ksheira. I mean ksheira like al, even, it's not necessarily talking about a kohenet, it's talking about any woman that is ksheira like al. And so they'll run on their own paths. They don't have to necessarily be intertwined over here. Meitiv Ravin Bar Nachmon. So now we have a question, which is that we have a limud, which is lo yikachu, lo yikachu. Twice the word lo yikachu is used. It is isha, zona, v'chalala, lo yikachu. V'isha, grusha, mi'isha, lo yikachu. So the pasuk repeats lo yikachu twice unnecessarily. Malameit, sha'isha muzheret, ayideish. From there you see that a woman is restricted by the man. So Amarava, so our assumption now is that means that the woman is equally restricted like the man. A kohenet has the same restrictions as a kohen. So Rava explains this. Amarava, kohecha duhu muzhar, he muzharet. Kohecha duhu lo muzhar, he lo muzhara. So the Gemara says, no, that it has to do with the relationship. It's a bilateral relationship, which means that restrictions only on the kohen, not on the kohenet. But in a illicit or legal marriage, for instance, we have here where a kohen is going to marry a grusha. There it's a problematic marriage. The restriction is not just on the kohen for marrying the grusha. There's a restriction on the grusha to marry the kohen. So that's what it means that there's a bilateral relationship. It's not that kohen and kohenet have the same din. It's that kohen doing something wrong creates a problem not only for himself, but also for the woman. The restriction is not solely on the kohen, not to marry the grusha. There's a restriction on the grusha to marry the kohen as well. So Gemara says, Vaha mehocha nafka? Is that where we learn it from? That women and men are equal? Whenever there's a restriction, both men and women are equal? Mid Rav Yehuda Marav nafka? We learn that out from Yehuda Marav. Damar Rav Yehuda Marav, v'chein tana debate Rav Yishmo, ish o isha, ki asu mikol chatot adam. So the pasuk says a man or a woman who does a sin. Hishva kadov isha le ish le cholon shim shebetorah. There's an equation, an equality in all punishments, all lotasin in the Torah, that they are equal. Men and women are equal. There's no differentiation in the isurim. So any time it comes to a lotasin, it comes to a negative precept, there's no distinction or differentiation between men and women. That's why zman grama has no impact on a lotasin. Because here it's onesh lotasin. Zman grama only impacts by asay, because asay is not an onesh issue. And that's a kum va'asay. You must do something over there. So asay, there's not an onesh, and therefore there is a distinction there in zman grama. Obviously there are exceptions to this rule. For instance, in the Gemara in Kiddushin already notes these things that are not applicable to women. I would say there's certain Yisurim, lo tekifu pat roshchem, and also lo tekalgo pat zechenchem. You're not allowed to cut your peyot and your beard. Those are just not relevant by women. So they're excluded from, not because there's not an equation of equality. It's just not relevant. It's not shayach. It's not shayach just like for a man. There are certain restrictions that are not relevant because they only apply to a woman. But otherwise, all lavin, we're completely equal. So over here, why do I need a separate limud to teach me that the woman and the man are equally restricted here when you have like a kohen to a grusha? I know that already because all men and women are equal. When it comes to a lotase, the lotase applies equal to both sides. Gemara says, imahahi, if I only had the limud of amar yudam rav, havamina lava shaveh bakol. That's only true when it's a lav that applies to everyone, meaning that it's equally applicable to all people in Klal Yisrael. Aval lav sheinu shaveh bakol, a lav that is only applicable, for instance, to kohanim. For instance, here, a kohen marrying a grusha. Lo, maybe in that case we will not say there's an equation of equality between men and women. So Gemara says, is that really true? Vayri tuma, the lav sheinu shaveh bakol, tuma, which is only relevant for kohanim, not for Israel. The pasha there more that speaks to tuma speaks to the kohanim, doesn't talk to or speak about the Israel in that parsha. Israel can become tameh. There's no restriction becoming tameh mate. According to some Rishonim, including Rashi, there is a restriction near the regel to become tameh, and therefore one has to make sure they are tahor for the regel. So many Rishonim, like Rashi, think that that's doraita for Yisrael, but otherwise there is no restriction against becoming tameh. Others believe that even that is only a restriction derabanan when it comes to the regel. But the main restriction against becoming tameh, or which is applicable in all levels of tumah, is true by a kohen, not true by Yisrael. And because the parsha of Emor says bnei aron velo bnot aron, so there's a specific exclusion to exclude the women, meaning that kohanot can become tamei. They have no restriction against coming tamei, as opposed to a kohen who has a restriction for going into the beit hakvarot for becoming in contact with the mate. A kohen has none of those restrictions. Why? Because it says bnei aron velo bnot aron. But implied in the limud is that had I not had this limut, the women would have been included, even though it's a lav she'enu shaveh bakol. Our assumption, or default assumption, would have been the women are included. The fact that we need a meal tells you that, but that's a lav she'enu shaveh bakol. So how do we know that? Must be, we know it from Amar Yehuda Merav. So you see from this that there's no such distinction between lav she'enu bakol and lav she'enu shaveh bakol. The time of dikhtob rachman ben aron v'lo aron halav hochi avamin anashim chayavot. My time, lav mishum de Rav Yehuda Merav. Isn't it because of Yidu Merav? Mar says, lo, the gamrina me lo yikachu. No, the source is lo yikachu, because at first we thought it only applied to lavim that are shaveh bakol. Then we say, maybe lav shein shaveh bakol doesn't apply. That's why we have lo yikachu, lo yikachu. But once we've established it also applies to lav shein shaveh bakol, it's going to apply to tumah. And so the source is not Rav Yehuda Merav. The source is you lo yikachu, lo yikachu. Ikadamre, some say it this way, it's an interesting view of it, which is, Kicha, it's trichale. We needed kicha, sacha dat chamina ligamer mi tuma. We would learn from tuma, kamash malon, that we don't do this. The basic machloket here is, how much is covered by Rabbi Yehuda Merav? In the first answer, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Merav only covers lavina shavin lakol. Only a lav that shavin lakol. Lav shenu shavin lakol is covered by lo ikachu. Tuma is also a lav shenu shavin lakol, but once we know it by lo ikachu, then we can apply it to tuma as well. In the second answer, in the Igud Amre, they're saying that Amri Yehuda Merav covers everything. Lav Sheveh Bekol and Lav Sheinu Sheveh Bekol covers everything. No matter what, Isha and Ish are equal. Then why do I need Lo Yikachu? Because I have Tuma. Tuma has a specific miut, which says, B'nei Aron, V'lo B'not Aron. Now I come to look at Kohen LeGrusha, Kohen LeZona, and what do I do there? Do I say it's like Rav Yehuda Merav, or do I say it's like Tuma? I don't know which one it is more like. I might even have opted to say it's like more like Tumah, because that's a din in Kohen, the Tlav Sheinu Shaveh Bekol. So I would have used that as the paradigm to teach me the din over here. Along comes lo yikachu to say, don't do that. Don't say that the paradigm is Tumah. Say the paradigm is Ish V'Isha, Ishva Katuv, that they're equal in Amar Yud Merav. So in the second case, everybody assumes that Shaveh Lekol, Sheinu Shaveh Bekol is Asur for Ish and Isha. The only reason I would have thought otherwise here is because Tuma has an exception. So I would have thought maybe by Kohanim there's this exception that goes across the board and applies to Grusha and Zona and Chalala, all of those as well. Talmud Omer lo yikach lo yikach says no, it's part of the general principle that Ish and Isha are all equal. Rav Papa v'Ravuna b'Rei Rav Yeshua iklu'u. Here we have Lehin Natzvu, but if you look in the Bach, it's Leshich Natzvu, which is the name of the city. Ba'adre the Rav Idi Ba'avin, it was the city of Rav Idi Ba'ajin, Bo Minayu. He challenged them with this question, Huzuru k'sherot l'inaseh l'psulin. Is there restriction against Kohanot, female Kohanim, from marrying into those that are Pasul? Although, or maybe not. So Amarlo Rav Papa, Tinitua. Rav Papa says, we have a Mishnah that should indicate to us what the din is. Asara Yuchsin, it's a Mishnah in Kiddushin, that there are 10 different segregations within the Yuchsin of what classification you can be. Talumi Bavel, that came from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. Kohanim, Leviim, Vistrailim, those are very straightforward. Chalalim, again, Chalal is from the Psul Kuna. Gerim, converts. Charurim is from the word Shichrur, that's an Eved Knani, that is Nishtachrer, Shifcha Knanit, that was Nishtachra. Mamzerim, again, no, Nitinim, we've already discussed, where the Nitinim are from the Givonim. Shtuki Vasufi has a lot of discussion in the Gemara and Kedushin, but let's just take it, it's the people who do not know either one of their parents or both of their parents, they're unaware of their lineage, and therefore there's a safek as to the kashrut of this individual, because we don't know how this individual was produced, either because we don't know either of the parents, or we know the mother, but we don't know who the father is of this child. So now the Mishnah continues and says, Kohanim Levi'im v'Yisrael mutarim lavo ze b'zeh. Kohanim Levi'im Yisrael can marry amongst themselves, because there is no restriction against the Kohen marrying a Yisrael marrying a Kohen. None of those are restricted, it just follows this patrilineal lineage, which is that whichever is the father will dictate whether he remains a Kohen, Levi, or Yisrael. Levi'im Yisraelim chalalim gerim charurim mutarim lavo ze b'zeh. A Levi in Yisrael, as opposed to a Kohen, a Levi in Yisrael can marry a Chalal. There's no din of Chalal versus a for Yisrael or Ger. And only Kohanim are restricted in Chalal. Gerim, which is a problem which we've discussed already earlier in the Masechta as to why a Ger might be restricted to a Kohen, but or a Gioret might be restricted to a Kohen. That restriction does not apply to Levi'im and Yisraelim. And then Charurei, again, which is a Shifcha Knanit, or an Eved Knanit that was freed, there's no restriction against Yisrael or Levi marrying them. So they're Mutarim Levo Zeh B'Zeh. Then, there's a third category of allowed marriages, which is Geri Charurei, Mamzeri Nitine Shtuki Vasufe Mutarim Levo Zeh B'Zeh. All of those can marry, the assumption being that Kahal Gerim is Eno Nikra Kahal, that Kahal Gerim is not called Kahal, therefore they don't have restriction of Mamzer Lo Yavo B'Kahal Hashem, then they're not restricted in that. So all of these individuals are allowed to marry because they all don't fit into the Kahal. They're all outside the Kahal, and therefore they can marry together. But what is absent, this is what Rav Papa points out, Bilu Kohanot L'Chalal Loktani. Over there it does not permit Kohanot to a Chalal. The Mishnah never says that one of the categories is a Kohanot to a Chalal is Muteret.
Doesn't take any women at all.
Okay, very good. So the answer of the Gemara is exactly what you're suggesting over here, which is that the Mishnah is written from the male framework or direction, and therefore this would have been out of place. He says it slightly differently than what you're suggesting over here, but that's basically the answer, which is Amalei Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua. So Rav Huna b'Rei Yeshua there says, Ko'echot ahani nasbe mehani, v'hani nasbe mehani, k'tani. So he says, anywhere where it's a marriage that works in either direction, so that means that the men can marry the women and the women can marry the men, either direction would work, then it's written. Kohen came into Ilu by the Mintzav Chalala, Asirale. A Kohen, since if he wanted to marry a Chalala, it would not work. Lo Kodani, then they didn't write the other way around, which is a Chalal marrying a Kohenet. So I mean that it's only because the Mishnah is talking about what's called Milta de Psika. Things that are absolutely clear and work in both directions, where it's irrespective of what the status of the woman or the man is. Doesn't matter if the man's the Kohen and the woman's the Chalala, or the woman is the Kohanet, and the man is the Chalal. So they wanted to give examples where in either direction it would be fine. In this case, that would not be true. Because for the Kohen to marry the Chalal would be problematic, as opposed for the Chalal to marry the Kohanet, which would have been Muteret. So even though technically it is Muteret, it doesn't fit into the structure of the Mishnah, which is telling you cases where it doesn't matter whether it's the male or the female. So now, Atu the Kameh to Rav Idi Ba'avin. So Rav Idi Ba'avin posed them this question, and then they came before him after they had discussed it. Amalu Dardike, my young lads, Hachi Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, this is what Mesorah that we have Ramina Ramav, lo zuhu k'sherot l'inaseh l'psulim. There is no restriction, this is what we started out the stugia with the gufa, that there is no restriction on kohanot from marrying those that are psulim lekehuna, as opposed to for a kohen, where there is that restriction for kohanot, there is no such restriction. Right? Shniot mi divrei sofrim. The Mishnah mentions that there are cases where you have a problematic marriage because there's arayot mi divrei sofrim, which is derivative or second generation arayot that are only mi derabanan. So ba mine bnei beri mei rav sheshet. The people of the city beri asked rav sheshet, inquired of him. Shniya labal velo shniya liyabam. So now you have a case where the Baal is restricted to this woman because she's a Shnei Le'arayot, but the Yavam does not have that restriction. Now that is somewhat difficult because we're talking about brothers, remember. These are paternal brothers, so therefore they should have the same Arayot. What you have to suggest here is that it's a case where they have different mothers, and it's Eimimo. Eimimo is a restriction of Arayot, Shneiot Arayot. And since they had different mothers, you can have a case where for one of them it is restricted and for the other one it is not restricted. And again, that's how it would come out that you have such a case. So now the question is, Yesh la ktubah mi yavam or lo? Does she get a ktubah from the yavam or does she not get a ktubah from the yavam? Because over here, when she got married to the first individual, to the husband, it was a problematic marriage. And therefore she's not entitled to ktubah from that problematic marriage. But after, now she's thrown to Yibum, and now she marries the Avam, in that case, that is a totally fine marriage. So is she entitled to Ketubah? Or do we say that the Ketubah for a Yivamah derives from her original husband? And since her original husband, she had no Ketubah, she doesn't get it here. So the Gemara is represented. Kevin Damar Mar Ketubatah Nichsei Bala Rishon Leila. Since the Yivamah's Ketubah references back to the possessions of her original husband, not on the Yavam's possessions. Maybe since she had no entitlement there, she has no entitlement now. Odilma came in Dilu Leitla Mirishon to Kinula Rabbana Misheni. If you remember, the Mishnah said that if the first husband did not have any property, then her ktubah is connected to the Yavam's property. So Eitla, therefore she would have a ktubah over here. Samarlu Rav Sheshit Tinitua. We have this in a Braita. Tubata Nichsei Bala Rishon. That the ktubah is connected to her original husband's property or possessions. Bimaita shniya labal. If she was a shniya le'arayot to the original husband, afilu miyavam inla. From the yavam, she doesn't get anything. Now, as far as our question is concerned, we're done. The Braita says it explicitly, that she gets nothing from the yavam. If she wasn't entitled to ktubah from her husband, she's not entitled to ktubah from the yavam. That's conclusive. Now, the Gemara wants to understand the Braita, because the Braita's lashon is not so clear. Which is, here it says, even from the Yavam, she doesn't get. Michlal. From that you would infer, there are certain cases where she does get it from the Yavam. What is that case? Where she is entitled to the Yavam? Because we just basically excluded all those cases by saying that whenever she doesn't get it from the husband, she doesn't get it from the Yavam. But the Lashona Bright implies that there is a case. What is that case, or how does that work? So the Gemara says, Chatsurei Mechsera. The Bright is missing some language that would help us with the transition, which is Vakiktani. Tubatal Nikse Bala Rishon. That the Ktubah goes on the property of her husband, original husband. Vi Leila Mi Rishon Takinu La Misheni. If the first husband didn't have property, then she's given the right or granted the right from the Yavam in order to get her Ktubah hooked onto something where it has recourse. Vi Maita Shnia La Bal Afilu Mi Viyavam Einla. So it's referencing that first statement which says in a case where it's a good marriage on both ends, for the Baal and the Yavam, she's entitled to get from the Yavam, then in the case where it was a Shnia, the Baal, but not to the Yavam, Afilu mi Yavam Einla, even from the Yavam, she doesn't get, referencing back to the case where she did get it from the Yavam, where her husband didn't have it. So in one case where her husband didn't have it, she is entitled, that's where it's a good marriage all around. In a case where she wasn't entitled from her husband, she's still not entitled from her Yavam, which is the case where it was a Shnei Le'arayot. The original marriage was problematic. And since it was problematic, she's not entitled from the Yavam. Just a note here, the fact that the Gemara only asked the question as being a case where Shnei Le'Baal below Shnei Le'Yavam means that the Gemara knew in the reverse case, they knew what the answer was. Which is that in a case where she is Kasher Le'Baal and Shnei Le'Yavam, over there we assume that she's definitely entitled to the Ketubah. That's the inference from the fact that the Gemara only posed the question in one direction is that the Gemara knew for sure where she was Kshera Labal and problematic with the Yavam, that she is clearly entitled to Ketubah from the Baal, and on the next day, Baal HaRishon. And even if the Baal HaRishon, her husband, did not have property, she will still get it from the Avam, because the origins of this marriage were all Ksherim, and there's no reason to penalize her over here. So her right to the Ketubah is not diminished in any way that the Avam is a Shnia, because she entered in a marriage where she was entitled to a Ketubah. Vayminei Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Elazar is querying from Rabbi Yochanan. Again, Rabbi Elazar is a Talmud Chover of Rabbi Yochanan. So, Almana leKohen Gadol, Grusha veChalutza leKohen Gadol, these are all problematic marriages for the Kohanim. Yesh lahen Mizonot, or Ein lahen Mizonot. Are they entitled to Mizonot? Mizonot is one of the Tnaei Ketubah. It's one of the things that a woman is entitled to in the Ketubah. If, for instance, her husband passes away, then she's entitled to stay in the estate and take Mizonot from the estate as long as she doesn't collect her Ketubah. And while she's alive, and while her husband's alive, she's also entitled to Mizonot. Her husband's responsible to give her Mizonot. And in addition, if her husband leaves town and doesn't leave her with money, Beit Din will ensure that she gets Mizonot and allow her to borrow money on her husband's tab in order to get Mizonot. So, hey, Chidami, what's the case here? Ilu diyatva tutei, if she's still living with him. Here it's in a legal marriage, which is you have a kohen to a grusha, a chalutza, you have a kohen gadol to an almana. All of these are problematic marriages, and what are we going to do? We're going to demand that they get divorced. We don't want them staying together. So here, if she's living with him, and now she's asking for mizonot, b'amud v'hotzei kai, mizonot, idla? If she comes to Beit Din and says, I want my mizonot, Beit Din's going to say, divorce him. What are you talking about, mizonot? Forget about mizonot. We're going to force you to get divorced. So why would you ever think of an entitlement of mizonot? In that case, it's not even a question. It doesn't get off the ground because she's not even entitled to be married to him. Forget about mizonot. So lo tzricha shalach hu l'medinat hayam. No, it's a case where he went overseas, v'labdav achla, and she borrowed money to eat mizonot in that case. My, what is the din in this case? Now, Tosafot clarifies that the case is not where she just borrows money for mizonot, because even in a case of a regular woman or wife that does that, she's not entitled to anything. She has to get permission from Beit Din, and then once she gets permission from Beit Din, she can borrow, and then there's recourse against the husband. If she simply goes and borrows money, then, as Raj said, it's like, heiniach hakeren etzvi. Then the guy who lent her the money basically threw his money away, because he's basically doing it on behalf of the husband, but he's giving money where the husband didn't ever ask him to do it. He never gave him permission to do it. So there the husband has an obligation to repay it. So my, mizonet tanai ketubah ninhu. So now, since mizonot are a condition of the ketubah, they're a part and parcel of the ketubah, midi'it la ketubah, it la mizonet. Even though this is an illicit marriage, she's entitled to ketubah in divorce. It's an isur lav, and kedushin atov sin by an isur lav. And so here she is still entitled to ketubah. Since she's still entitled to ketubah in divorce, she should also be entitled to mizonot. Now, if the husband is present, we're going to force a divorce. But right now, the husband isn't present, so we can't force the divorce. So in the meantime, she should be entitled to mizonot, because that's part of her ketubah. Odilma ketubah the mishkol of meipak itla mizone dima te'akiv gabei leitla. The case, the ketubah, the only reason to have the ketubah is for when he kicks her out. That's part of the process of divorce. So we're going to grant her the ketubah because that's about getting divorced. Getting divorced, we allow you to do that and we'll allow you to pay the ketubah. But mizonot, that might actually keep the marriage intact. Because by giving her mizonot, she may be more likely to stay around and stay in this marriage than to leave the marriage. So because of that, maybe we won't grant her mizonot. Even though it's not ketubah and she's entitled to ketubah, ketubah is a process in which she's in the divorce scenario that we're okay with, that we're okay giving her the ketubah, even though you could argue that it prevents the divorce because it's going to cost the money to divorce her, but nevertheless, at least that's in the process of divorce. Mizonot is something that will actually maintain the relationship, keep the relationship together. There we may be more reluctant to grant her mizonot, even though they're tnai ketubah. Samalei leitla, Rabbi Yochanan says she's not entitled. She gets no mizonot here. V'atanya yeshla. Don't we have a braita that she is entitled to mizonot? So that is after he dies. So if they are married and they don't get divorced like they should have, and then he passes away, she can keep mizonot now. That part of her tanai ketubah are that she remains in the estate, she gets mizonot. In that case, she can do this because that's not holding together the marriage anymore. There's no glue because there is no marriage. He's deceased already. So over there, granting her mizonot is not going to change anything because the marriage is already terminated. The problematic mizonot are when they are still married. Obviously, if he's present, we're definitely not giving her mizonot because we want him to divorce. Question is, when he's away, we're also not going to grant her a mizonot because that'll hold the marriage together or may cause her to stay in the marriage longer than we want. So she will not be granted mizonot in that case. So Gemara says, Ita Amar, which is Ikad Amre, there's some that say it this way, Amarle Tanya Yeshla. So he said to them, there isn't there a braita that says Yeshla. Why would she get it if he has to divorce her? Why would he get mizonot? Ella Vahatanya Yeshla. Then what are you going to do with the braita that says Yeshla? That's talking about after death. Again, it's the same conclusion in the end. It's just how they started. How did Rabbi Yochanan respond at first? In the first case, Rabbi Yochanan responded, no mizonot. And then Rabbi Elazar brought the braita. In the second case, Rabbi Yochanan responded with the braita. Rabbi Elazar then challenges that and says, how could it be that the braita says Yeshla if he has to divorce her? So Rabbi Yochanan clarified that the braita is talking about lachar mita and not while they are married. Alright, Tan Rabbanan. Almana the Kohen Gadol, Grusha v'chalutza the Kohen Ejot. These are the cases that we just spoke about. Now in that case, Yeshla Ktuba, she has Ktuba, Peirot, Mizonot, Blaot, Vehipsula, Vivlada Pasul, Vekofin Oto Lotzi. So here are the rules in this type of problematic marriage. She's entitled to Ktuba, and everything associated with the Ktuba, which is Peirot, Mizonot, Blaot. We'll discuss each of these in a second. Vehi psula, she's psula because she's now in a problematic marriage, which will make her into a chlala. So therefore she's psula. Vivlada pasul, and the child born will either be a chlal or a chlala born out of this wedlock. Vekofin otolotzi, and we're going to force him to divorce her because he's not allowed to stay married to this woman. Shniot midivrei sofrim. In a case where the problematic marriage is the fact that it's shniot arayot. In that case, ein la ktuba, no ktuba. Lo peirot, lo mizanot, lo blot. All of these go away. But, hikshera, she's still a kshera, vivlada, kasher. She and the blood are kasher because the nature of the illicit marriage here is simply rabbinic in nature, not deoraita. Vekofino tolotzi, but we still force them to divorce because there is a rabbinic infraction over here. So it's clear what the Gemara is going to have to discuss is why is the din different in shniot arayot versus the cases of amanah kohen gadol or grusha v'chalutza kohen ejot. That's the whole next amud, is it going to be exactly what is that different? But, the question is, what are all of these items? So again, ktubah is very straightforward. She's either entitled or not entitled to ktubah. The next thing in the list is peirot. Peirot are difficult to understand here because peirot are an entitlement of the husband, not the entitlement of the woman. When she brings in nichsei melog to the marriage, the husband gets the right to the peirot. So in that case, what are you talking about? She gets peirot or she doesn't get peirot? It's irrelevant. Because it's him getting the peirot. So the way Rashi explains it is simply that the peirot that he eats, he doesn't have to pay her back for. Whatever he took in peirot, she cannot be gova, she cannot collect back from him because he took them and she doesn't have a right to pull them back. Or in the case where she's entitled to peirot, she can claim the peirot against him and say, you ate them when you weren't entitled to them, give me back my peirot. So that's the way that Rashi explains it. Tosafot, on the other hand, learns that the Gemara and Ketubot will explain this, that each one of the items that are granted between the man and the women, men and women, are actually trade-offs. Which is that he's entitled to the peirot of the nichsei melog. In exchange for that, he is obligated in pirkona, which means he has to redeem her. If she's taken into captivity, he's responsible to put up the money to pay for her. So there's a trade-off, which is you get peirot, she gets pirkona, she gets redeemed. And so what Tosafot claims over here is, Yesh la peirot, or Ein la peirot, is he obligated to redeem her? So that's the question here. And then how much is he obligated to redeem her? So what Tosafot says is that in the case where she's entitled to peirot, then if she gets taken into captivity, he's responsible to redeem her up to the amount of peirot that he ate. Up to the amount of peirot he ate, he can redeem her. Now, in a regular marriage, he'd be responsible at a shamayim, meaning that he has to redeem her for whatever the price is, irrespective of how much he ate in peirot. That's the trade-off. Peirot versus pirkona, that is the trade-off. But in this case, where it's a problematic marriage, he will be limited to the amount of peirot that he consumed, because that's what he took out. So the trade-off is peirot versus pirkona. We're going to say, whatever he took from peirot, he'll have to give back to pirkona, otherwise he's not responsible. In the case of the ein la peirot means that even if he ate peirot, he's not responsible to redeem her whatsoever. He doesn't have to pay anything. Not up to the level of peirot or not anymore, nothing. He doesn't have to pay anything. So that'll be the knas to her. Now, you're right for noting that in some of these cases, it looks like we're penalizing the husband, and in some cases, we're penalizing the woman. And that is exactly the case here. The question is, who is the problem in the marriage? And that's what's going to be the discussion now. The difference in these situations might be who is causing the problem here, or who is more likely to enter into such a marriage. And that's why, in some cases, we're penalizing the husband, and sometimes we're penalizing the woman. Now, bla'ot is the next thing, which means the worn-down clothing. Rashi says over here, bla'ot normally means that when the clothing is worn down, that depending on how they were brought into the marriage, the woman gets them back exactly like they are, and the husband's not responsible for the normal wear and tear on those items. So if she brought in a cloak for him to the marriage, and he wore it normally, and it wears down, then when they get divorced, he gives her back, and they blow out whatever the worn down nature of this item is, he doesn't have to pay for it, because that was part of the conditions of her bringing it into the marriage. Rashi claims that when it means that she's entitled to blow out or not entitled to blow out, means she gets the cloak back or not. In a case where she's not entitled to blow out, means that even though she, in a normal marriage, would be entitled to get it back, over here, the husband can keep it, and he doesn't have to give it back to her at all. Whereas in the case where he's obligated to give it back, then blow it means that he has to actually return it. Tosafot says, what do you mean? Why, what? If it's Ben, if it exists, she should get it back. Irrespective of whether it's a good marriage or not marriage, if it's here, why can't she take it back? So the answer, he says, is the case of the blowout over here is not a case where do you give the actual item up, but rather, Vanir Lari, he says that he has to give it back. So the question is, does he have to pay for the diminution in value over here, which is that when he's entitled to be married to the woman, then he's not responsible for the blowout. But if he's not entitled to marry the woman, then he's got to pay for the wear and tear, because he wasn't entitled to this, and therefore he'll have to pay for the wear and tear. So Tosafot learns wear and tear is if the husband's responsible for the decreased value from the wear and tear. That Rashi says is whether the woman loses the actual object and doesn't get it back. And so those are the items here. Mizonot obviously be subject to what we said before, which is when exactly she's entitled to mizonot. Alright, so now the Gemara asks the obvious question, which is, Amar Rabbi Shimon Lazar, Mipnei Mamru, Amanada Kohen Gadol, Yesh La Ketubah, Mipnei Shu Pasul Vehi Psula. He's Pasul and she's Psula, B'chol Makom Shu Pasul Vehi Psula. In a case where they're both problematic, Kansu Oto B'Ketubah. Then they forced him to pay out the Ketubah, meaning that he's the one who's going to lose in that situation. Mipnei Mamru Shniot Midivrei Sofrim, In Lehem Ketubah. In a case where it's Divrei Sofrim, Mipnei Shehu Kasher Vehi Ksheira. Since in that case there's no problem, then we're going to say the burden is on the woman. Now, underlying this, Rashi notes this, underlying this whole thought process is that the woman wants to be married more than the man. That's a principle that the Gemara lays out in Kiddushin and other places, which is that Aisha would say, you say your term in Aish. A woman wants to be married much more than the man wants to be married, and therefore, if everything is equal, we're going to assume it's the woman who's pushing the marriage and not the man. So that's the underlying assumption here, and that's why in a case where they're both Ksherim, we're going to put the blame on the woman, because if they're both Ksherim and there's no detriment to the marriage, because it's only Shniyam and Divrei Sofrim, then who was the instigator of the marriage? The assumption is it's the woman is the instigator of the marriage, because she had nothing to lose, and she wants to get married more. Therefore, if we put pressure on the woman, she's going to be the one who breaks up the marriage. So we're going to put pressure on the likely party who instigated the marriage. In a case where they are both psulim, that is not so clear over here what's happening. David already asked the question. You can already see this in Rashi. Rashi says, V'chachi gersinan. Rashi says, this is the girsa. What's the gisser? V'chei matzati b'tshuvat agonim. B'nei shehu pasul v'hi psula. Because they're both psulim over here. V'chol makom shehu pasul v'hi psula. Kansu oto mirabanan. In a case where they're both psulim, the knas goes on the husband. So v'chachi perusha. What do you mean they're psulim over here? David asked a fair question. The husband here is not pasul. The Kohen, while he's married to her, he has a problem. But as soon as he divorces her, then he goes back to being a regular Kohen. She's left as a Chlala, and her children are problematic. So what are you talking about? They're both Psulim over here. So Rashi says that he married her Baveira. So the Psul over here is that while he's married to her, he has a detriment here, which is that he's called a Chlal while he's married to her. And therefore, that's what the Psul is. The Psul is that he's a Chlal while she's married to her. She's a Chlala. But, in this case, who has the incentive to be married and disincentive here not to be married? The woman has a disincentive because her problem is permanent. For the Kohen, his position is only temporary. So who's going to drive the marriage over here? He's more likely to drive the marriage because he has no downside from this, and therefore he's going to drive the marriage, and that's why we penalize him and not her. So that's the way Rashi learns it. Obviously, by Rashi saying Hachi Garcina, and you know there was an alternate girsa here that Rashi didn't have. Tosafot already brings that alternate girsa. Rabbeinu Tam Mefereish, Tehu pasul de kamar avlad koi, ubi pasul didal achud, afil makom shavlad kasher, lo margalade. So here he says that the problem here of Pasul and Psula is not talking about the Kohen and the wife. It's talking about Pasul as the Vlad and Psula as the woman. And therefore, where the children are going to be problematic, the woman is going to back out of the marriage. She's not going to go into a marriage where the children that are produced are going to be problematic children. She has a disincentive already, either because she's going to have children that are psulim, or because her husband's going to be mad at her because she's the problem here. She's creating the psulim here. And so because of that, they're going to opt to penalize the husband and not the woman. Right, so that's the way that he learns it. V'yesh sfarim degarse, and here Tosfos brings the alternate girsa, which is hu kasher v'hi psula. In a case where he's kasher and she's psula, then that's what's found in Tosefta, which is this alternate girsa that was obviously found that Rashi was saying no to, is where he's kasher and she is psula, then we put the obligation on him. And that's obviously this case. The Kohen is kasher, she's psula, so obviously who's incented not to marry her? She's already incented not to marry her. So we need to incent him not to marry, and that's why we penalize him. So that's the way that Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar explains the difference of the penalties over here. In a case where there's nobody loses, we put the penalty on the woman because she's likely the problem here. In a case where the husband is okay and the woman is getting, her life's being changed over here by the fact that she's getting married, she's going to be a psula, her children might be psulim, whatever the reason is, Rashi, Tosafot, there are other girsa, those three different reasons. In that case, we're going to put the pressure on the husband because he's really not, he has nothing to lose, and that's why he's more likely to be the instigator of the marriage. So that's how Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar explains the difference. Now, we move on to Rabbi's explanation. Rabbi Omer, halalu divrei Torah, v'divrei Torah, inzvichim chizul. The restrictions by Gusha, Chalutza, and Almana are mina Torah. So over there, we don't have to put pressure because there's already an Isser Doraita that's standing out. People worry about Isserim Doraita. But, halalu divrei Sofrim, the case of Shniyot Me'arayot is only a rabbinic level issue. So there, divrei Sofrim, tzrichim chizuk. We have to reinforce the Isser Dorabanan. How to reinforce it? We take away all of these privileges because that will make it clear that there's something wrong over here. Dabar Acher. Now we have another answer, which is, zehu margila, vizuhi margilato. Another reason is that over here, she is the instigator, and over there, he is the instigator. Again, this is similar to what Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, which is that the party who has nothing to lose is probably the instigating party of the marriage, or the one driving the marriage, and therefore we're going to penalize whoever the driving party is. Davar acher, man ktanilo. Who wrote this Davar Acher? We have a position of Rabbi Shimon Elazar, we have a position of Rabbi, and then we have a Davar Acher. That Davar Acher, is that on Rabbi Shimon Elazar's statement saying another thing? Or is that on Rabbi's statement saying another thing? Ikadami Rabbi Shimon Elazar, Ktanila. Some say it's Rabbi Shimon Elazar, it's an extension of Rabbi Shimon Elazar's comment. Umatam Kamar, it's explaining the reason behind his position. Matam Amro, hu pasul v'hi psula. Why do they say that he's pasul and she's psula kansu oto? They penalized him, ktubah, kansu oto ktubah. They force him to pay the ktubah, the knas is that he pays the ktubah, and issue margila. Because over there, he's going to be the instigator of the marriage. He has nothing to lose, so he'll go into this marriage, because what's the big deal for him? So we're going to penalize him and make it like it's, we're going to give him a disincentive as well not to go into such a marriage. Matam hu kasher v'ikshera kansu ota ktubah. Why, in the case where they're both kshirim, do we force, put the pressure on her and she loses her ktubah? Nei shehi margilato. Because over there, she's going to be the instigator because nobody has anything to lose. And therefore, since she wants to be married more than he does, she's probably the driving party. So we want to disincent her. So basically, it's saying what I had said to you, explained in Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, is this is the reasoning or the logic behind Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar's opinion. Ikedamar Rabbi Ktanila. Some say it's Rabbi's position. What it is, v'chalutza kakashile. He has a little bit of a problem. He said the distinction here is Doraita versus Derabanan. That's true by Grusha. That's true by Almana. Chalutza is only a problem, mi Derabanan. So how do you deal with that problem, Derabanan? V'chalutza Derabanan, v'idla ktuba. Chalutza is a din Derabanan, and yet she still gets a ktuba. Hadar Amar came into Pasila, mi Derabanan, ze margila, v'zohi margilato. So again, since only there's only a psul Derabanan over here, Zeu Magila, in one case she's the driving force, in one case he's the driving force. So, again, the reason by Chalutza, we say that the penalty is on the Kohen himself, is because even though it's rabbinic in nature, there's still this other in the background issue, which is that in that case she's a disincentive because of what's going to happen to her. He's not disincentive, and therefore we have to put the penalty on him and not on her. So even though it's not Deoraita. Implicit in this answer is that the first case was not this way. That in the first case, Rabbi actually seems to be saying that Chalutza would not get to have the ketubah. She would not get her ketubah in the case of a Chalutza. It's only because he added on this additional thing in the second Lashon that it implies that Chalutza is included. And she gets a ketubah. Implying that in the first answer, she would not have gotten a ketubah. And that would have been the machloket. The machloket between Rabbi Shimon Elazar and Rabbi would have been a Chalutza le Kohen. Because Rabbi Shimon Elazar would say a Chalutza le Kohen, the penalty is on him, and she is entitled to a ketubah. Rabbi say no ketubah because he says it's Derabbanan. Derabbanan doesn't get a ketubah. And that would have been the Ikabenayu. That would have been what's the difference between them. In the second answer, now the Gemara asks, Mak Ikaben Rabbi the Rabbi Shimon Elazar. So now, according to this learning, then the question here is, what's the difference between Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon Elazar? In the second case, because we already know, if the first was shown, we know what the difference was. Chalutza al-Kohen was the difference. But if Rabbi also thinks Chalutza al-Kohen and Jot is the same din, then what's the difference between Rabbi Shimon Elazar and Rabbi's reasoning? They both come out with the same division. So then is there any nafkamina between them? That's one way to read the Gemara. There are others that say, no, even in the first case, Rabbi agrees that Chalutza is also gets her ketubah, because when the Chachamim instituted Chalutza throughout Shas, we say Grusha and Chalutza are put together, even though one's Doraita, one's Derabanan, we treat it like a Doraita. They're a package that come together. And so therefore the question here is on both Lishonot. There is another Girsa in the Gemara, you should also know, which is Ma'ika Beinayu. There's no Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon Elazar, it's Ma'ika Beinayu, and it's asking what's the nafkamina between the first Lashon and the second Lashon. Not what's the difference between Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon Elazar. Alright, those are all the different possibilities of how they're posing the question. And here's the answer to this, and this is going to take us all the way down to the Mishnah, which is, Ike Benayu. What is the difference? Amar of Chista. Just interesting to note, we're going to have a number of Amoraim speaking here, and it's actually chronological, which is that the first statement is by the earliest Amora, and then they're going to have a problem with it, and you're going to have a later Amora try to answer, and a later until you get to one of the latest Amoraim, who is Mar Bar Ravashi, who's going to give the final answer of the Gemara. So, Amar of Chista, Mamzeret, Vinitina li Israel ikabenayu. The difference between them is going to be a case where a mamzeret marries a Israel. Manda mar doraita, hanami doraita. Rabbi who says that the issue is doraita, this is a problem doraita. Mamzeret is not allowed to marry Israel, and a nitina is not allowed to marry Israel. So in both those cases, you're dealing with Isu doraita. In that case, we said that she gets her ketubah, the penalty is on the man. Manda mar ipneshu margila. In this case, where we said, who is the instigator over here? Hahi Margalale. She is going to be the instigator over here. Why would she be the instigator over here? So if she's a mamzeret and a tina li Yisrael, the product of that marriage is problematic. The child born to that marriage is going to be a mamzer. So what's her benefit in marrying a Yisrael? So the answer is that Rabbi Tarfon already taught us that you can cleanse a mamzer. That you can cleanse a mamzer by having him marry a shifcha kananit. And then the children are not mamzerim, and then mimshachrer, the children afterwards. So there's a way to get rid of the shame mamzerut. And because of that, she looks to marry Yisrael because that gives her a higher class, gives her status within society. The truth is that you couldn't say the same thing if she married a mamzer. You can argue the same argument. But the Gemara says over here that marrying Yisrael gives her a certain amount of status because she's part of the kahal. Right, exactly. She would have a certain amount of legitimacy. And then since she can cleanse her children, she will be willing to go into such a marriage. She will get involved in marriage, and the husband won't be so angry about the children because they can take care of the children. But, Ulu Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer is the one who argues on Rabbi Tarfon, who says, Damre harize evedu mamzer, that it doesn't work. That patent, that idea that Rabbi Tarfon floated, which is that he'll marry a shivcha kananit, you know what Rabbi Eliezer says? When you have a mamzer marry a shivcha kananit, you know what you get? You get an eved mamzer, so it doesn't do any good for you. So how lo margalale? Then in that case, she would not be the instigator. Velomide. So then that's not a good answer of a differential between them, because there in both cases, we're going to penalize the husband. It's the husband's fault because she has no incentive to be in this marriage, and it's doraita. So now again, you lost your differentiation over there. So again, the first answer of Chista says is the difference is a mamzeret and a tina al Yisrael. Then the Gemara says afterwards, that only works well according to Rabbi Tarfon. But according to Rabbi Eliezer, that doesn't work because she is disincented because the children are not going to be okay in this case. Right, so that's an interesting question. Even though he knows the children will be mamzerim, for some reason the woman is more impacted by that than the husband. But it's clear here that that's the way the Gemara is viewing it, that he's only interested in being with the woman. The children and the status of the woman, that's the woman's issue. Or if there's a problem, it will lead to a problem with Tata, which is that she's disincented over here, which is that if the children are mamzerim, she's disincented because he's going to blame her for the problem. She's going to blame her for the problem. She's going to have a problematic marriage because he's always going to be in fighting with her. And so she has a much greater disincentive. So even though he might have a disincentive because the mom's there, still the problem is her. And since she's going to get blamed for it, she has a much greater disincentive from being in the marriage. So he might be disincented, but her disincentive is much higher, has a much higher threshold. So Gemara says, El Amar of Yosef, so here's the next Amor giving a difference, is B'magzir Grusha. Case where he takes back his Grusha. You see the word Mishineset here, that is the case, but it's not necessarily in the Girsa of the Gemara, which the Bach takes out, but Rashi says that's what the case is. The case is where he divorced her, she married a third party, and now he takes her back. So Ikeminayu, Manda Mar Doraita, Nami Doraita. Over there, there's a Din Doraita. So according to Rabbi, the penalty is going to be on him because it's a Din Doraita. Manda Mar Yipneshu Margila, Hahi Margilale. She is the one who's going to, again, cause the problem over here. In terms of being Psula Lekuna, she's already Psula Lekuna, she's a Grusha. So she has no disincentive from marrying to make her into more Psula to the Kuna. In addition to that, since the child born of this marriage is not going to be a psula because it's he to'eva ve'ein v'lada to'avim, so that she is problematic, but her children are not problematic in this case, so then she's not disincentive from re-entering into a marriage. And again, all things equal, she's going to want to marry more than he is, and therefore we want to disincent her here, so therefore she's penalized. So that'll be a difference. But the Gemara asks, and this is what Fred raised before, Ulu Rabbi Akiva damar yesh mamzer michayvi lavin, that there is a mamzer produced from michayvi lavin in this case. There is a disincentive for her because the child born will be a mamzer from this marriage. So halo margilalei, therefore she would not get involved in this marriage. Lo mide, she's disincented because she's going to be the cause of the problem here. The child's going to be a mamzer, and therefore the husband's going to get angry at her, and she's not going to want to be in this marriage knowing that she's going to be in a bad position. So therefore she won't be incented, or she's more disincented than the husband in this case, and therefore we'll penalize the husband and not penalize her. So El Amar Papa, so Rav Papa was another one. It's Bi'ula the Kohen Gadol Ikabinayu. Difference between them is a case of a Bi'ula. A Kohen Gadol has to marry a Bitula, but that's a mitzvah asay. So the marrying a Bi'ula is an Isur asay. So an asay doesn't produce a mamzer. A lav produces a mamzer, but an asay doesn't produce a mamzer. So Madamar Doraito, Anami Doraito. This is a Doraito problem. Therefore the penalty will be on him. She'll get her ktuba. Madamar Pneshu Margila. If the problem is who's causing the marriage here, who's instigating the marriage here, she will instigate the marriage over here because, again, what's the problem? Bi'ula to a Kohen Gadol does not make her into a chlala. Right, so there's no chlala here, and the child that is born isn't necessarily a chlal. So then she's not disincented in any way. She could have married a Kohen Gadol beforehand, and she can't marry a Kohen Gadol afterwards, so that's not a problem. Maybe Kohen Hajot. Obviously, if they get divorced, she's going to psula the Kuna anyway. We do have the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that you can even create a chlal from a chiyuve asay. We said, okay, she doesn't have any problem here, because even if she gets ruined a little bit, her children are all fine, the husband is fine, and then she really has no downside, because if she stays in this marriage,
would she get the
truma? Right, so that was a question we had earlier in the Masechta, which is that in the case of a Kohen Gadol marries a Bi'ula, it's different than other Psulim. Because for a Kohen Gadol, when he marries a Bi'ula, after the first Bi'ah, she's also a Bi'ula.
Right.
So when he marries a Bi'ula, the only problematic time is the marriage itself, that moment, right, of the marriage, the consummation of the marriage. After that point, it doesn't matter, she stays. So over there, there's much more reason to leave the marriage intact than to leave her there. That's number one. Number two is it doesn't produce a halal. There are all these reasons to say that in that case, she's much more comfortable staying married to the Kohen, and therefore she needs the disincentive. So the Gemara says, well, that works well according to everybody who says that an asay doesn't make a halal. But we have Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov who says that an asay makes a halal. Then she's disincentive because then the children born are going to be problematic, and then he's going to blame her for that, and it's going to be a problematic marriage. So where it says, if that's the case, then halo margala levelo mide. She's not going to instigate because she knows there's a problem here. So what are you going to say? Alam ravashi makzir safek sotato ikemenayu. It's a case where he takes back his sota, safek sota. He warned her not to seclude with an individual, and sure enough, she goes and secludes with that individual. So now he is taking her up to Yerushalayim to have her drink the mesota. In the meantime, he has biyah with her. They reconcile and he gets back together with her. There's a restriction of nitme'ah v'nitme'ah, which says that she's asur leboel, asur lebaal. She's restricted in her husband until she clarifies the situation. So now, madamar doraita, nami doraita. We're talking about doraita, it's a restriction doraita. The baal is restricted in the woman, minha, torah. Over here, she's not in disincentive from doing this because either way, she's going to be psula de kuhuna, which is that if he has to divorce her because of this situation, she's psula de kuhuna. If he has a biyah with her and she's already psula de kuhain, since she's going to be psula either way to the kuhain, she has no disincentive here. The child born is not going to be a mamzer. So what's her disincentive over here? She will instigate. And actually, she's the party that's guilty over here. She really has more incentive to reconcile with the husband than anybody else over here. So Gemara says, so that's the case where she will instigate. So Gemara says, Ula Rav Matya ben Charash tamar afilo alach bala la shkuta, ubala bederach hazazuna. So wait a minute. If she's now going to be classified as a zuna, halo margalele velo mide. Right? Then she's not going to be incented to do this. Why does the zuna matter? So Rashi says over here, that she'd rather drink first and not become psula the kihuna. She has more incentive to drink the waters and get cleared than she does from sleeping with her husband and becoming a zona. So Tosfot says exactly what we mentioned before. I don't understand Rashi. Bekasha came into Girshala Bachtiyahi. Right? If he divorced her beforehand, then she's not gonna drink. So that's number one. Or even if you say that she didn't get divorced yet. They're not divorced. He's taking her to drink. Then the same thing is true for the Rabbanan as Rav Matya ben Charash. In that if they get together before she drinks, she's no longer going to drink. If she's not going to drink, she's pasul the husband. She's going to have to get divorced anyway. So then why is Rav Matya ben Charash problematic over here? Why does he create a problem over here? Tosfot says something here that being called a zonah is something that is beyond. It's one thing to be called a grusha, and you're not allowed to marry a kohen. It's another thing to be a zonah and not be able to marry a kohen. The shame zonah is a much more severe and a status that a woman does not want, and therefore there's a huge disincentive for her to do something that will make her into a zonah. So even though, number one, she's going to be divorced anyway, so if she's going to be divorced anyway, she's going to be psula de kuhuna. It's one thing to be psula de kuhuna through grushin than to be psula de kuhuna because you're a zonah. That's number one. Number two is, why is Rav Matya ben Charash different than the Chachamim? Because by the Chachamim, she won't get a shame zonah. So not getting a shame zonah would still not be disincentive to her because she has nothing to lose. But Rav Matya ben Charash says she's going to be called a zonah, that's a huge disincentive, and she'll avoid that. She will not instigate or start such a marriage because zonah is such a negative term, and therefore she'll be disincentive. That's the way Tosfot learns it. Versus Rashi says that she'd rather drink then become psul de kuhuna because she'll lose that on truma. He says she's not getting truma. It doesn't say she's not getting truma anyway. Either she divorces and she does not entitled to truma anymore, whether it was from her father's house or from her baal because she didn't drink. Or if she does drink and now she's going to be dead or she has to divorce her. All the scenarios are not good scenarios. First, the Tosfot says the problem here is the shame zona. That's what the problem is. Right. So then the Gemara says, according to that, so what's the answer? Alamar amaravashi sota vadayi gaminayu. It's a case where she is a vadai sota. So there, in the case where she's a vadai sota, she's an eshes ish sizinta, the sirele midoraita. Over there, she is restricted in midoraita because she's a sur the baal and a sur the boel. So if they get together, then she is restricted midoraita. Over here, she doesn't have a disincentive from getting together because she's already had an extramarital affair. She's already a zona. She has a shame zona already. She's not going to be poseller from the kuhuna. She was already psula the kuhuna already. She's lost anything. She's got a shame zona. She got everything already. She has no downside by getting together with her husband again and becoming another zona. I mean, she's already a zona. She has no disincentive whatsoever over here. And therefore, that's the difference between them. Over here, midoraita, we're going to put the penalty on him because it's a dindoraita. On the other hand, for disincentive, we're going to put the penalty on her because she has nothing to lose over here. Since she has nothing to lose, we're going to make sure that she's disincentive from doing that. Now, Rashi asks, what about according to Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva says that Isur Lavin produce a mamzer. So over here, why don't we say the disincentive from her is that she's going to give birth to mamzerim? So Rashi notes that the Gemara earlier said that there was a kol modim bebala sota shein avlad mamzer. That we had a principle earlier in the Masechta that Sota was an exception to the rule, that everybody agrees by the Sota that you don't produce a Mamzer. Even Rabbi Akiva would agree that there's no Mamzer over here, and so therefore Rabbi Akiva won't be a problem. And so Sota Vadai is the case where you'll see a differential between Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar and Rabbi, because it is Doraita, but the woman is the one who has nothing to lose here, and therefore she'll be the instigator of the marriage. And therefore the penalty will be on different parties. According to Rabbi, the penalty will be on the husband. You'll have to pay a ketubah because it's Doraita. Whereas for Rabbi Shimon Elazar, the penalty would be on the woman because she's the problem here. She's the one who's not disincented from marrying or keeping this marriage alive. Okay, we'll stop here by the Mishnah at the bottom of Pehei Amud Bet.